Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is episode 19 of the Driving Eureka podcast, and the theme for episode 19 is fun. We're going to have fun. So we have...
Don't say it so seriously.
It's the only way I am, Doug. Come on. I'm the straight guy, remember?
We're going to have fun. We will enjoy ourselves today.
You're hurting me.
Okay, so we are already having fun. See? I can see the smiles.
And they wonder why I have a headache after this. Okay. So our feature article is Fun is Fundamental. And I got to tell you, I got a kick out of reading this, and especially since you sent me a link to the video of this thing. See, there's Jumpstart Your Brain, I believe, is the book that this came from, which was your first book. But it's kind of a story that you wrote. And so give me a little bit about the inspiration and how you went about writing this.
Okay, So, you know, mostly we do Driving Eureka, which is the latest book, but I was pawing through some stuff and I found this, the art for this. It was actually a photocopy of it, but a color photocopy, but the art for a story in my first book, Jumpstart Your Brain. And Jumpstart Your Brain was, it was about creativity, but it was about, it had kind of a twisted sideways. I mean, the idea was to get people to laugh, and we'll talk more about the importance of fun in the book segment, because I took a segment from the book about it. But, you know, the idea was to open up people's minds. And at the end of the book, because, you know, I wrote the first book, and when you get your first book contract, and that's in the old days where they gave you like a lot of money as an advance. It was done by William Morris. William Morris and Time Warner did the book. You know, you're figuring like, okay, this is going to be the book. You know, because I'm never going to do it again, right? And little did I know I was going to write 7 so far with an 8th coming. But so you put everything in it. And I said, I really like Dr. Seuss a lot. And I said, I wonder if we could create kind of a Dr. Seuss-like storyline about creativity and how as we old, you know, we get stupid. I think we talked about that recently. Mm-hmm. Can I talk about how to bring people back to life? And in today's world trip, we got so much negativity, so much bleh, 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 that I figured we needed to have a smile this week. And so the idea was to give ourselves a little bit of fun. And so with my dear friend David Werker, the most amazing writer on planet Earth, who is my co-author on the book, and Randy Mazzola, who did some just inspired artwork, and with a nod of the head to Ted Geisel, who is better known as Dr. Seuss, we wrote this crazy little story about a character named Yink and how Yink is it, is what it's called. And of course, the it being that idea that you need to find it. And we tell a story of Yink growing up, joining the workaday grind, and then his boss, a Mr. Herman McMoss, a very Seussian type character. And you got to see the art if you can, because it really, it's kind of hilarious. Is got a real problem, and then Yink is struggling and struggling to find the answer, and then a Yinkling named Pearl, that would be his daughter, tells him to ease up, Dad, and come on, get a grip, and with a sense of play, he relaxes his mind, and the best it. The site of Topeka. Okay. Cheese ball way to get Eureka name in it. But, you know, and it's just a fun and foolish story that really, I don't know, it makes you smile. And yes, it's over the top. It's not great art. But it was the way we ended the book, the Jumpstart Your Brain book, which is now in a second edition, Jumpstart Your Brain 2.0. So we've recorded it. I recorded it with the images. Just made a, you know, just with the pages flipping by. If you're at a device, where you can see the video with this podcast. You can do it. If you're not, if you're driving, don't stop. Don't try to look while you're driving. Okay. But you know, you can see it on a desktop or pad or I don't know how that all stuff works, but we've got it out there and here it is.
Hi, this is Doug Hall, author of the new book, Driving Eureka. But for this video, I'm going back in time to my first book, Jumpstart Your Brain, to tell you a little story about Yink. There once was a Yink who knew how to think. He was especially good at pretending. This Yink was a guy with his head in the sky. He could dream sweet dreams without ending. When Yink was a kid, dreaming was all that he did, and he often would think a great thought. While his pals watched TV, Yink would set his mind free to invent, which he did quite a lot. He thought of umbrella hats, of an electric ball bat that never misses whenever it swings, of shoes with large wings and kites without strings, to name but a few of Yink's idea things. But the older he grew, the less this Yink knew, or so he thought when he started in school. He learned to draw straight and to never be late, but mostly he learned dreams are for fools. Yink decided to try to grow a necktie. He bought a dozen identical suits. And quick as a blink, Yink learned not to think in meetings with corporate recruits. Yink turned off his mind, joined the workaday grind, and got a job with a reputable firm. He bought an average home with an average loan, which he pledged to repay on a 30-year term. Then one day, Yink's boss, a Mr. Herman McMoss, told employees the outlook was dire. Sales were a-crawling, profits were falling, said McMoss, our fat's in the fire. What we need is an it, a great it to wit, an idea to fill rivals with fear, an it that won't quit, an it with true grit, and who I choose for the job is right here. McMoss pointed to Yink, who wanted to shrink to the size of a little bug's ear. For Yink doubted not, if an it wasn't got, he'd most assuredly be out on his rear. What is it you mean? Yink asked, his gills green, by an it that won't quit with true grit. Said McMoss, don't ask, this job is your task. All I know is I'll know it when I see it. So Yink sat and thought. He was in a tight spot. He grimaced and grummaced and groaned. All his its were the same, each one of them lame. His brain dribbled and drabbled and droned. Yink thought a lot. So hard did he think, he practically turned orange, purple, and pink. And yet, he could draw a straight line and be right on time. But he'd forgot how ideas are made. Still, he jotted a note to pass off as it, so he hoped to escape the boss's office unscathed. Unfortunately, Mr. McMoss did not see Yink's it in a positive light. This it is the pits, McMoss said in a snit. Not even close. It's nowhere in sight. Then Herman McMoss became particularly cross. I'm not yanking you, Yink. I want its that don't clink. It's your it. Your it is rinky-dink. Furthermore, your it stinks. Yink asked yet again for a how, what, why, when, for a hint where an it could be found. Said McMoss, you got me, but I'll know when I see. Please don't ask me right now to expound. Yink grew so morose, he turned white as a ghost. He barely kept a stiff upper lip. That night his little girl, a Yinkling named Pearl, said, he's up, Dad, come on, get a grip. Let's play, Dad, it's fun. You chase and I'll run. Never mind all those its, ands, and bits. Let's run through the yard and play really hard. So they did, and Yink forgot all about its. And after a while, Yink started to smile. The best it, the side of Topeka, popped into his head, and Yink instantly said, I christened this it a Eureka. I'm sorry. Yink quickly perked up and promptly worked up a Eureka report right away. It wasn't hard what he did. He just thought like a kid. His boss didn't quite know what to say. You know, it's pretty hard to rhyme with Eureka. Okay, so it's a stretch. Yink, you've done yourself proud. I'll say it out loud, said McMoss on the corporate PA. Your ink is pure gold. Your ink breaks the mold. It's the best it ever. Hooray! Because of Yink's it, McMoss' ink scored a hit. Yink and his boss had much occasion for laughter. And it became Yink's style to think like a child, and he lived happily long ever after. That, my friends, is the story of Yink. That's it. Written by my dear friend, Mr. David Wecker, and with me, as well as Randy Mazzola doing the art. And if you want to see amazing stories, the greatest writer on this planet, Mr. David Wecker at BrandFlick, or you can connect to us at the Eureka Ranch, Innovation Engineering, All the Foolishness, as well as the amazing Brain Brew Custom Whiskey. Hey, have fun, folks, and hug a child today, okay? I have it on good authority. All of us were at one time 4 years old. You've got it within you. You've got it within you. Let's have fun. Cheers.
Okay, so this, I mean, it's very cheesy. It's got a message in it, which is good, that I like. And as I'm listening to it, I'm saying, oh, cool. Well, that's pretty much everybody. As we get more obligations and there's things that we do, and as you mentioned earlier about, adults, as we age, we get, we become more stupid from the standpoint of that we aren't creative and we aren't thinking in terms of anything other than our obligations and things that we have to do, and we've lost this creativity associated with it. Now, did I pull the right things from the story?
Yeah. I mean, Yink, as I said, he could draw a straight line and be right on time, but he forgot how ideas are made. And so we lose that spirit. Now, I'm not saying that a four-year-old's more creative than you. That's not what I'm saying, because they don't know how to make the thing real. But there is a sense of free-spiritedness. As my daughter Victoria says, as a little child once, we were driving, and I said, oh, we got to get there. We're not going to make it. And she said, Daddy, miracles can happen. Don't forget. Hmm. And that is so true. You don't presuppose things. Let your mind go. There'll be plenty of time for planning and organizing and doing it. But just release, because I got to tell you, it's just more fun, when you just let the mind go, and you can do this. But the stresses and the strains around you, just, it doesn't make life fun. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all going to die, right? So why not have a little bit of fun in the process before we get there?
Okay, and don't forget to look in the show notes for the Yink link. How do you like that, Doug?
Huh? There you go.
See, I'm having fun.
You know what's amazing is we actually had marionettes made of Yink. Wooden marionettes. I had a guy make.
It's like the three caballeros, huh?
Yeah, we have a Yink marionette that we made.
Nice.
I mean, it's just fun. I mean, life is too short. Let's have fun.
It's time now for the Driving Eureka book segment with author and inventor Doug Hall. Let's move to our book excerpt then, our book segment, which is much easier for me to say. Still on the theme of fun is fundamental. Now, you go through some things. Now, I got to tell you, Doug, as I'm reading through, my gosh. Oh, Lord. You get serious there for a minute where you go through the research that came out of people, having fun and they're more creative. And I thought, oh, this is great for me, as far as that. Then you get into the ideas of things you can do to have fun. And I'm sitting there and I don't know if you're going to go through all of these, but folks, if you go read the newsletter, 4 through 7, please don't do because you're going to get reported to HR. in your company for doing these types of things. All right, that's the setup for this.
There is
go science. Ahead.
Okay, there is science that says that humor works. Okay, they've done studies when people are laughing versus not laughing. They come up with more creative ideas. And there's a famous study from the University of Maryland where students that were watching outtakes, bloopers from TV shows were more successful coming up with solutions. 300 to 500%, by the way, not 5 or 10%, 300 to 500% to come up with solutions than the group watching the math film, The Area Under the Curve. Not exactly. And so, you know, laughing is easy. We just have to open ourselves up. So the amazing David Wecker and I, so this is an excerpt from Jumpstart Your Brain 2.0, my first book. And we had some methods to help you get a good belly laugh in case you're mentally constipated and you need some help. And these are all, these are not politically correct. And I'm just saying that.
Yeah, these are before the Me Too movement. Definitely.
This is before the Me Too movement. This is more like you're going to a stand-up comedian who's off the record. Okay, so I'm just going to tell it the way it is. So I'll just read a couple of them. Check out a country music karaoke night at any Holiday Inn near any Japanese auto plant in the Midwest. Okay. Distribute a couple dozen whoopee cushions to your fellow passengers the next time you take a bus, a plane, or the Staten Island Ferry. By the way, you should know that the book opens with the story of me being in a very overpriced resort in the middle of the Rocky Mountains with about 300 top executives from Anheuser-Busch, and they didn't know it. But underneath their seats, I had taped a whoopee cushion. And so, at the appropriate moment, I literally had my own imprinted whoopee cushions, and they would blow up the whoopee cushions, and we would have one giant flatulence. It was glorious. Glorious.
So is that in the Guinness World Book of World Records then? Or?
Good thought. You're getting with the theme here, Trent. You know? And so there's all kinds of craziness down in here. I remember one. I had a young fella came to work for me as a apprentice. This is before Trump. We used to call them apprentices before the TV show. And he said that he laughed at this one so much that he actually did it just for giggles. I think they might have been drinking on campus. I'm not sure. But number 10, and there's a whole bunch of them here. You can read them on the newsletter, is wrap your arms and legs in aluminum foil, wrap a football helmet in foil, and put it around your head. Attach two aluminum pie pans side by side and wear them as a chest protector. Fashion a shield and sword from cardboard and wrap them in foil too. Walk up and down the sidewalk in front of your house or apartment, brandishing the sword, watch your neighbor's faces. This guy did it.
They're going to call the police. They're going to call the police. In your case, they probably expect it. But if I did something like that, the police would be there in like 5 minutes.
Just got to have fun. And my dear friend Chick Thompson, author of the book What a Great Idea, and really just a spectacular creative expert. I mean, just one of the greats. He told me that he'd done some research. He found that the average 5-year-old laughs about 110 times a day. Mm. Okay, at five. As we laugh, it drops. By age 44, we laugh only 11 times a day. And it only goes up upon retirement. So it's like we laugh as a kid and we laugh when we're older. And in the middle, we live this, you know, drudge, duty, hurry. You know, we just die. Well, enough already. Let's have some fun. Let's not take it seriously. And in the process, 300 to 500%. So when the boss comes by, says, why are you laughing? I'm trying to be creative, boss. Remember, the annual report says we're innovative and creative. So I'm just doing what the CEO said.
You're going to get sent to the loony bin. I got to ask this question, Doug. Have you done or been trained in improv, or is it just you? Is it just Doug?
No, I've not. I don't know anything about improv. What I try to do is to live in the moment, which I guess that's what improv is.
Yeah.
I mean, at its essence, improv is you are fully present in the moment. And when your mind sparks something, you speak before you think.
I have that problem anyway. I'm not sure it's improv.
And that's what it's. But I think it's about being fully present and be present, listen, observe, and just let the mind go. Don't constrain it. You know, mentally constipated, you know, is what we get. And we just need to let it go. Let it go.
So is there something directly someone could take from, let's go back to the create sessions that we talked about in the last episode. Is there a way to set up these groups? I know you said criticism's bad. That was from the last episode, but then utilizing, do you start with people watching a funny film or something? How do you get people kind of ready to create?
Well, I mean, we've got a bunch of things that we do, but one of the biggest ones is to just get, you know, we take them through an approach to use free associating off of ideas and allowing one idea to beget another idea, and I'll challenge them. It's amazing. If you tell people to be foolish and have fun, they are. Literally directing a group. If you say, I want you to come up with outrageous ideas, they do it. If you say, I want you to have serious ideas, they do that. And so when you set the tone as the facilitator or as the leader to say, I want to just take these things over the top. Let's just have some fun with this. Go beyond reasonable. It's easier to tame down than it is to push out. So start from the outrageous and bring it in. People naturally like to go with that, and because that's the rules, and people that follow rules will follow the rule because that's what they've been told to do. Okay. But you can't assume that they'll do it. You have to basically lead them into having an openness and having some laughs. And again, you know, one of the things that I do, if I'm in a room and I'm not the leader, but the group's like going nowhere, I've learned if I say three really stupid things, it changes the tone of the whole conversation, you know, with a smile. I mean, I'm not being mean, but in a smile, just say them in a fun way and have some fun with it.
So this is, you know, as I hear you talk, and some, even from some of the previous episodes that we've done, this is one of the reasons why innovation, I think, almost has to be separate from the rest of the, or another reason why innovation needs to be separate from the rest of the things that you have going on a daily basis, that it needs kind of its own focus, that you need to be pulled out of your kind of current day-to-day grind in order to be creative and to have a portion of your thought associated with just being creative. Is that, does that fit the narrative of what innovation is about, or not?
I really hope not.
Okay.
I really hope not. Mm. I mean, that is the existing belief.
Okay.
But why should only certain people have fun at certain moments and everybody else have drudgery? They have to fix. They have to turn around, and they've got problem solving they got to do. Everybody's got problem solving. We're about enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day. And so it should, there's a time and a place for it, obviously. But, you know, when we're problem solving, we should open up our minds, and it should be something that everyone embraces, not just a few people at a few times. It's like, you know, I joked before about P&G had the time. We will wear casual clothes between Memorial Day and Labor Day. After that, we go back to serious suits, you know? I mean, come on. Really? Really? you know, everybody should have the fun, and it needs to become part of, and that's what happens when you get a culture of innovation, which is, I know it's crazy, but that's what we're trying to do.
I wasn't necessarily trying to dismiss people from doing it, but are you referencing that it needs to really be integrated? I'm just saying when you're creating ideas, I mean, you have to be focused on doing that. I mean, granted, an idea may come up at any time during the course of your work or something associated with that, but doesn't it require a group of people kind of getting together, a diverse group, as we've talked about before, and coming up with meaningfully unique ideas in order to come up with a focused effort on getting our mind out of what we're doing every day and going after that? Maybe I'm not expressing that in the right terms or correctly. Does that resonate with you at all, or do you still see it as something that's just part of what you do?
I think it needs to be life. It's life. It's how you live.
Okay.
It's a 24/7 thing. You're either open to working smarter and finding new ways of doing it, or you're turning your mind on and off. What I want to get to is I want to get to not turning it on and off. I want it to be on all the time.
Okay. All right. Well, that probably is the best statement of explanation of what your thought is on that, then.
This is the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy podcast, where we will take you behind the scenes so you can see what it takes to build a whiskey distillery business. The Eureka Ranch team, led by Doug Hall, are creating a craft whiskey company with patented technology like has never been done before.
Okay, let's move to the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy. The importance of fun in the Brain Brew Whiskey. So you're applying fun everywhere you go. I got it now. It's integrated into the culture that you're building with the Brain Brew folks. Give me some examples.
Well, I got to tell you that I think that when you're a craft company, people can feel your feelings when you created the product. That in those products, they can get the sense of joy. I mean, you say call it fun, call it joy, call it whatever you want. They can get the feeling of it. And it's sad because many whiskeys have become, especially the very expensive ones, have become so damn serious. You know, I mean, it's a leather chair in a wood-paneled room with a crystal decanter and a glass of, you know, fine sipping whiskey. Yes, yes. I mean, it's like, I mean, bleh. You know, I mean, whiskey was made. It was a working man's thing, and it was fun. And I think that joy needs to be brought into it. And it's coming. I mean, David Wecker, when it was written with books, and hopefully we're going to do the next book together. He taught me when we were writing something, if when we were reading it to edit it, we laughed at what one or other of us, even though we knew the joke, we laughed again. Then we said, my guess is people will laugh the first time they read it. In other words, if we're not amazed and having fun, you know, with the thing, then nobody else is going to have fun. Where we end up with organizations that say, okay, I'm going to deadly seriously make this so that people can have fun. No, it doesn't work that way. You got to get that spirit into the thing. And you got to open yourselves up to those things. And in the case of whiskey, yes, we do the whiskey. I mean, taking 200-year wood, I mean, virgin American wood from an old barn that's come down, from whiskey at the time of the riverboats, that's nuts. Okay, it's crazy. Mm. And it's crazy fun because you taste it and you go, oh, my God, that's like totally different than today's whiskey because the wood and the trees that grew, this is what we use in our paddle wheel product, was totally different back then. And that's awesome. But the place where it really goes crazy is cocktails. I mean, remember, we've talked the data. 18%, very big, huge, megaton study, stupidly expensive, you know, tens of thousands of people across America. 18% drank whiskey in the last 12 months.
Yep.
Okay. That means 82% didn't. But when I go to cocktails, I can get, you know, 75, 80% of them. I'm going to like it because, you know, a cocktail made with whiskey as the backdrop gives it a richness that you're not going to get with vodka, you're not going to get with gin, and you're not going to get it with rum. That's a whole different dimension. And why are the top cocktails made with whiskey? Because that's how you get that real complexity of taste and you get these magical things that have all of these tensions that come together. And so cocktails is where you can really rip it and have fun if you make your whiskey for cocktails. That's why we do this custom cocktail experience where we take you through, we have you taste, like, you know, we'll start out with an old fashioned and we'll take our Riverboat series and we'll give you four old fashions with four different whiskeys. And people in the industry, old puckered people, will say, well, when you make a cocktail, it doesn't matter what whiskey you put in it. Oh, well, you're wrong. Okay. You're just wrong, old man. Because if you taste an old fashioned made with the four, our four core whiskeys, and you go, my God, it's a totally different cocktail. And then we start to show people about highballs and cocktails and the ratios, and we have them go through an experience. And we generally connect it up around the four seasons. So spring, summer, winter, fall, cocktails throughout the seasons and the moments. And all of a sudden, you know, people that maybe never had one or had one or two are opened up their mind. They go, oh, my God, there's amazingly interesting things. And then we teach them how to customize it for themselves. Because, so when you go to a bartender trip and you ask for a cocktail, especially a whiskey cocktail, they might ask you a couple questions. What do you like? What do you this? And you don't know it. But they're adapting your cocktail without you even knowing it. They're adjusting which whiskey they take. Do they start with rye? Do they start with bourbon? Do they start with an American four grain product? They're playing with, is it an ounce and a half or 2 ounces of whiskey? Are they going to do 1 teaspoon of simple syrup or two? I mean, they're making adaptations, trying to guess what you're going to like. That's why when you go to a really great bar, you have the cocktail. You go, oh, my God, that's amazing. What's that called? They tell you the name. You go home and you can't make it because they've adapted it. And we've gotten, at Brain Brew, we've gotten really, really good at this. People come in to the bar at the Eureka Ranch in our tasting room. And they have a drink and they go, my God, that is so amazing. I can't believe how cool, that was so good the way you made that. And then we educate. So we show them the trick. We say, okay, for you, this is what I did. And for him, I made it this way. Now he had, you know, taste the difference. They go, geez, yeah, that's an amazing difference. And so we're enabling people to make their own cocktails so that they can do it. And then it's just plain fun. I mean, it's just fun.
Yeah, no, and I'll have to say, I started out when you first started introducing these cocktails. You know, I had a lot of fun with the martini. I mean, it was just funny. So if people go back to that particular episode, and I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head, but the martini and how you went about making it. Well, it was just kind of a fun episode anyway, But since then, you know, I made the Sazerac, and I had some friends over actually this past weekend, and we made the Sazerac, and we also made the bourbon milk punch, and the Sazerac. Yeah. It's funny you set it up very well, which is you're either going to really like it or you're really going to like it, because that was kind of the reaction. For instance, my daughter, she didn't like the Sazerac. But a good friends of ours, Marvin and Misty Brown, they tried it and they loved the Sazerac and that kind of a licorice taste. Now, like I said, I don't pour out all that absinthe because it's expensive associated with that. And then at the Super Bowl, I made the bourbon milk punch, and people liked that. I mean, it was just, and I think people just had fun trying something different, something that they didn't have before. And, you know, it's an, like you said, it's an experiment. Now, I'm not doing the same type of experiments you do. I'm just, you know, enjoying cocktails and we're having fun with it.
That's right.
Okay. So you.
So I'm going to give people a homework assignment.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the first part. Go to the website for the podcast or doughall.com and click on it to get there. And you can open some newsletters or maybe finally we should just make a document that has every cocktail so far.
Yeah, it's on my list.
Okay, so you can get that. And pick three of the cocktails that are least familiar with you. You're least familiar with. In other words, I don't want you to turn around and just, you know, do one. Oh, I know that. No, try something different and give them a try. Okay, they're all proven and reliable. If you want to listen to the episode where I describe it in more detail, but you know, try something new to get a new taste. Then part two is I want you to then start to mess with it. So riff off it. So last week we talked about the Algonquin where we took pineapple and replaced it with grapefruit juice. Start to do your own riffs on these things. That's what this is about. Okay, this is about fun and bringing it together. And when you get something cool, give it a name and a recipe and go to the Doug Hall Facebook page and post it. Post it. And let's make a celebration of fun whiskey cocktails and share them with one another.
Yeah, I, you know, and for me, you know, I'm tonight. I bought all the stuff yesterday for the whiskey sour, to make with the orange and the lemon and the lime. And for me, it'll be because I'm not using
zest.
Yeah, and the zest. But also, I've never used anything other than a mix before. So for me, stop. Stop. How do you know? But okay. So I'm going to, you know, just craft it, you know, the way that you describe. And for me, that's a step up. Before I was using a mix, quit using mixes. Maybe one of the things that you try as far as your homework and doing this, because you do get to the actual raw ingredients that go into these cocktails. And for me, that's a change. That's something that's very different for me, because I never really thought about it. It's just easier.
You will never, ever go back. It is a pain in the butt for some of the cocktails to squeeze limes, and limes went stupidly expensive a year ago, but to squeeze limes, to squeeze lemons, I don't care. There is not a single bottled or canned lemon or lime juice out there. They're just not worth drinking. I've tried them all because it's such a pain in the butt to squeeze them all the time. But I got to tell you, you make them side by side, you will never, ever have you'll never go back to the bottled crap. You just won't. Because the fresh is amazingly better. Now, and it's really good for about 24 hours, but you can leave it for 3 or 4 days and you're still going to be way ahead of the other. It's not going to be as good as it was fresh, but it's still going to be amazing. It's just going to be amazing. And just get a screw top on a little jar or something and close it up and put it in your fridge so that you can have it. I always have lemon juice, lime juice. I'm starting to do more and more with grapefruit. So I'm starting to have grapefruit all the time so that I've got stuff to play with, to have as a cocktail.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's something else we cover off in the episode is, you know, I've got a whole bunch of new bar tools now that I didn't have before. I had a cobbler shaker. I mean, and I didn't even know it was called a cobbler shaker. And then you introduced me to the Boston shaker. So there's different things happening other than just, the drinks themselves. Now, in your newsletter, for the first time, now I haven't seen this before. You've got the keelboat. You've talked about some of these: the keelboat, the paddle wheel, the deckhand, and the tall stacks. And I'll be sure to put that picture also in the show notes. And then you have each of the drinks. It looks like you've got the bourbon milk punch. I'm not sure. This looks like one of the
Embassy. That's the second one's Embassy. And then you've got You've got a Gold Rush and then a Boulevard.
Okay. So you've got those four. By the way, maybe one of the future things you need to put on your list, Doug, is to make non-boring glasses. You need to have the Doug Hall glasses to go with these creative drinks that you have, something that looks fun and I don't know. They all look the same, but anyway. Yeah, there's always something that's out there. But that's the first time I've seen the four that are out there. Can you briefly go through what each of these are and what's
in them? These are prototypes that you're seeing. Those are just prototype labels in the image. But as we've talked, Cincinnati pre-prohibition was a commercial home of whiskey. There was more whiskey made in Cincinnati and in the surrounding areas going into Kentucky and that, and owned by folks in Cincinnati, than anywhere on the planet. There was literally 10 times the value of whiskey made in Cincinnati was 10 times that of beer. And we're a German town, and there was a lot of beer being made. Mm. So this was the epicenter. And it was primarily because it was the Queen City of the West. It was the market town where the steamboats came to ship down to New Orleans and to the world. And so it was the time. So in making this line, we made this just for Cincinnati that we're going to introduce coming up, and it's really celebrating the Cincinnati as this place with the riverboats. Okay. And so they go in order up to more intensiveness, if you would. The first one is Keelboat. It's a 4-grain, easy drinking product. We've got some unique twists on this thing, and it celebrates the keelboats. The keelboats were the ones that would, you know, you had flat boats first. It would just float with the current. Keel boats had a keel, and you could now steer them. Mm. So rather than just pushing with poles, you could actually steer them a little bit. So it was the next step up of boats. And so we celebrate keel boat kind of slowly going down the water, nice and easy. It's a 4-grain product. It's got a high wheat content to it. Very smooth. It makes very, if you're new to whiskey, it's great. It is the ultimate cocktail. It is no speed bumps in it. It's just a very, it's like velvet. It's really, really, really nice. It's a 40% alcohol product.
Okay.
Next up is really the flagship of the line. It's called Paddle Wheel. This is celebrating the paddle boats. And the bridge from in Cincinnati, you can see in the background of the image, Toby did these incredible artwork. And it's full label art, like you see on wine bottles. Again, not something that's done on whiskey bottles. And the paddle wheel, it uses 200-year wood. So we take old wood from an old barn down in Kentucky. We clean it off, cut it up. And it's actually cleaner than the wood that you get today because there was less pollutants when the trees were growing. And it gives you a taste. It's the closest you can get. It's a bourbon, 45% alcohol bourbon. It gives you the taste of what whiskey would have tasted like, you know, back at, 100 years ago. And in fact, I've had 1920, 1930 whiskeys that have the same character to it. And in fact, a top whiskey expert over in Edinburgh, he tasted it. He says, okay, now I'm upset with you. I said, why? He says, now you've got the finish of old whiskeys. How the hell are you doing that? I said, it's old wood. He says, it totally figures that the wood was different back then. So this is an amazing, this is our flagship bourbon. This adds more richness to your cocktails. So if you want a little bit more richness, you're going to get more there. And it is about the corn, but it's more about the wood that's going to do that. Then the next one goes over the top. It's called Deckhand. And it's also subtitled The Working Man's Rye. And this is a rye whiskey, a 95% rye whiskey, 48% alcohol, just like ryes are, up a little bit higher. And this product really celebrates the working man. And it's really a celebration for bartenders. Bartenders love this product because it really gives, if you want a more whiskey forward, this has 5 different woods in it. So we're using 200-year wood. We're using young American oak. We're using European oak. We're using maple. And we're using cherry wood. And so you've got 5 woods that give this complex yet smooth. A rye like nothing else. I mean, the ryes regularly people just go out of their minds for because it's a totally different type of rye than what you're used to. Usually they're really hot and spicy. This is just it's an elegance. It's just amazing. Makes great cocktails. And then last in the line is Tall Stacks, the big stacks on the steamboats. Now we're at the time of the steamboats, so we've moved up the line here, and this is a 3-wood smoked. And so now we're getting that smoke cloud in the background. You either love it a lot or not. It's like the Isla. As Isla whiskeys, the smoked whiskeys, the peated whiskeys are to Scottish whiskey. This is to bourbon. This is a bourbon. And you either think this is the greatest thing you've ever seen. In fact, the photo that you're seeing, the fellow that took the photo tasted them and he's like, I need some of that Tall Stacks. People just go crazy and it makes a cocktail like you've never seen before, but it is it's a more specialty thing. You've got to be pretty intense. If you like Isla, you're going to love this. And if you like smoked food, really smoked food, you're just going to go out of your mind when you taste this. It's also, I will tell you, if you have a Malbec oyster from Prince Edward Island and you pour a little bit of this on it, it's heaven. Mm. It's heaven.
See, I like that, and this is more inside information, I like that Timber Wolf that you had me try probably 6 months ago or maybe longer than that.
Yeah, it's a rum product. That was okay. A rum product that we
okay.
did. Yeah.
All right. All right, very good. So are these going to be just available then in the Cincinnati area ultimately?
Yep.
Okay.
Just Cincinnati. It's just going to be a local product celebrating the local word. And Tripp, you mentioned Sazerac. Mm-hmm. That you like the Sazerac. Mm-hmm. So I thought you'd said that. So I'm the cocktail this week is a twist on a Sazerac. Okay. It's called Remember the Maine. And this is a 1939 cocktail by Charles Baker. It's part Sazerac and part Manhattan. And it's named after the U.S. naval ship, the Maine, as in the state, that mysteriously exploded and sank off the coast of Havana, Cuba, which was controlled by Spain. And of course in 1898, and this is what caused sparked the Spanish-American War and led to Cuban independence. But so what we do with this is got some oomph to it. So we're starting with 2 ounces of our deckhand rye that we just talked about, or another craft rye. So it's a big taste. 3/4 ounce of sweet vermouth. 1/2 ounce of cherry herring, which is a cherry liqueur, and 1 teaspoon of absinthe. And we generally stir this and then strain it into I'm really liking these martini glasses. I just think it gives a nice elegance to upgrades the cocktails, although you could serve it over the rocks too. But you've got the vermouth and the rye of a Manhattan, but you've got the absinthe of a Sazerac. So it's kind of this twist between the two. And I just think it just brings some fun to it. It, you know, people that are, I'll have Manhattan. I want a Manhattan. I want a Manhattan. I want a Sazerac. I want a Sazerac. And all of a sudden you do this kind of flip, which has got a real history to it. And I just think it just brings a little bit of fun to people and gives them a new experience.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, you got another one for me to try now. I'm going to have to go out and get the cherry herring, cherry liqueur. That's used in something else, but I can't remember what the drink was that they had, or maybe it was just at a college thing.
There's also another thing. There's another version called Luxardo, which is used in the Hemingway.
Ah.
The Hemingway daiquiri or martini uses Luxardo. I've not made Remember the Maine with Luxardo. I should probably try it that way. There's an old joke that, you know, if you've got a cocktail, every cocktail will be made better if you add Luxardo or champagne. You know, is classically what to do it. Cherry herring's got a little different character than Luxardo has to it. It's got more of a cherryness to it. So,
okay. Well, maybe that'll be your homework then, is to try the Luxardo in it.
Yeah, so. I stock my bar stocks both because they're you know, but again, I'm crazy, I guess. So
yeah, well, sometime we're gonna have to get a picture of what's inside Doug's bar. So probably a whole episode on its own. All right, so have fun, everyone. That's the key to making good whiskey and products and everything else.
Yeah, life's too short. Let's have some fun.
Because we appreciate you as a listener, we are offering for a limited time 4 things. A 1 hour abridged audio of the Driving Eureka book. A subscription to the Driving Eureka newsletter, which contains weekly advice from Doug Hall on how to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And the newsletter has other offers that are not made public. The Driving Eureka prescription for success. You answer questions and we'll help you assess your ability to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And you get advice on how to grow your ability to innovate. And the last item, access to a Doug Hall interview with a radio legend. To get these offers, go to www.doughall.com/podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the Driving Eureka podcast on iTunes.